So beginning of verse 1 of 1 Samuel 25. Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned for him, and they buried him at his home in Ramah. Then David moved down into the desert of Maon, and a certain man in Maon who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband, a Calebite, was surly and mean in all his dealings. While David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 men, young men, and said to them, "Go up to Nabal at Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and to your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not mistreat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your own servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable towards my young men, since we have come at a festive time. Please give your servants and your son David whatever you can find for them.'" When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name. Then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat that I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords, and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. One of the servants told Nabal's wife Abigail, "David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us all the time we were herding our sheep near them. Now, think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I will follow you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into the mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "My lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May my lord pay no attention to that wicked man, Nabal. He's just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal. And let this gift, which your servant has brought to my master, may it be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's offense, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. When the Lord has done for my master every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember your servant. David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request." When Abigail went to Nabal, he was in the house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk, so she told him nothing until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things, and his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. This is God's word. We're at the time nearing the end of 1 Samuel where, remember, David is living in the wilderness, and he's being pursued off and on by King Saul. King Saul is David's number one enemy. King Saul is jealous. King Saul is angry. David has done all these righteous things, but Saul, the outgoing king of Israel, is still after him, still trying to exercise his vengeance towards David for his popularity, for God's blessing of him. And in the chapter before this and the chapter after this, in 1 Samuel 24 and 1 Samuel 26, David has opportunities to put an end to Saul, and David resists. He discerns that it's not God's will that he would take justice into his own hands. David would not do a preemptive strike on Saul to get rid of this enemy that keeps bothering him, that's banished him to the wilderness. But now here in 1 Samuel 25, David is about to take matters of justice into his own hands. Nabal is kind of David's enemy number two. And he's about to wipe out Nabal until Abigail, his wife, interrupts him with grace. What we see underlying this chapter is that when David is in this wilderness with these 600 followers, he's finding productive and fruitful things to do. So if you're in a wilderness experience, we've talked about wilderness experiences, if you're kind of feeling lost, you don't feel like you've got your grounding under you, and God is leading you through a time of discernment, a time where you're threatened, a time where you're just trying to make sense of life. Don't use that moment as excuse to not be productive, to kind of be lazy, to kind of just fall into bad patterns. David is making the most of his wilderness experiences by protecting people from other people in the wilderness that are bandits and thieves. So 1 Samuel chapter 25 tells us clearly that what David is doing in this wilderness full of its threats is that he is in the desert of Maon protecting people like Nabal, from the bandits and muggers that are looking for people with full wallets or valuable merchandise. And that's precisely in these circumstances that David finds something to do. David finds some work in the wilderness. I'm convinced that David or God is building David up as a leader. And so David sees things happening. He sees what opportunities he does have before him, and he does something about that. He organizes and he empowers his followers to provide this civil service, to be kind of like the sheriff in the western towns where lawlessness is ruling. And so David is running from Saul, but that wasn't his full-time job. David, during these times of hiding and of wilderness, is providing oversight and protection to others. He's building a miniature kingdom, if you will, and enabling his followers to do something fruitful and productive with their lives. He doesn't whine and say, "Oh, I'm a victim of my own circumstances." He takes what he's been given and he finds something useful to do with it. I think being in the wilderness is sometimes an excuse to just kind of fall into lawlessness, right? The young men and women that don't have work, don't have jobs, they can find themselves getting into trouble. This is a great, I think, just fundamental lesson that we can all use as kind of an introductory point in this story. What's David doing? He's doing something useful with his hands, even while he's waiting to be king. There's no wasted time, wasted experiences in David's life. So in faith, David serves the community out of his sense of God's call, even though that his being on the throne hasn't happened yet. And I think it's in these wilderness experiences that God's shaping his character and getting him ready to be a king. So we meet the characters of the story, Nabal and Abigail, and of course David. And Nabal, His name literally means fool. Nabal in Hebrew is foolish one. David and his men, they've been protecting those living in this area. And Nabal is one of the wealthiest people in Carmel. We're told that he's a Calebite. Now, that's not a very common term, but we remember Caleb back from the wilderness story of Israel. When Caleb and the other 11 spies went into Canaan, Caleb was one that exercised faith in God and said, "God will be with us. We can take this land." And Nabal is nothing like his forefather here. He's done well. He's amassed a lot of wealth, but it's clear that it's not by virtue, it's not by kindness to his workers and his household. He's a mean and surly man. He's vicious in his rule. He's very self-absorbed is the best way I would describe his character. In verses 15 and 16, one of Nabal's servants describes David as having provided a wall around them, with the result that nothing of his property was ever missing. Well, those of you who run farms and businesses know that the bigger you grow, the more hard it is to keep track of everything. And if you've got people on the perimeter, not even your employees, but people looking out for your belongings and your well-being, I think the least thing you could do is thank them and show them kindness. The wealthier the herdsman, the easier it is for a thief to pick off just a few animals here and there. David and his men have served Nabal well. Now you could say, "Oh, Nabal didn't ask for them to do this. He doesn't really owe them anything." But now it's sheep shearing season. This is a time of festivities and feasts and excess. So if you've been blessed and you're just taking in all your harvests of He has his thousands of sheep, and he's shearing them. He's going to just amass a huge income right now, selling his wool through the markets. David asks at this time if he could spare something to give his men. for their kindness in return. Since they've been serving him, David sends 10 men, declaring peace and blessing and goodwill on his household, everything he owns. He just simply asks, whatever you can spare. But Nabal says, who is this David? He doesn't even acknowledge his personhood. Who is this son of Jesse? Identifies David with the very robbers and bandits that he was protecting him from. That's what he means when he says that there are many servants breaking away from their master these days. Like you said, if you have a big operation, it's pretty easy for someone you hired a couple weeks ago to kind of not show up, and he conveniently took some of the sheep with him. And then we get this full onslaught of self-centeredness in verse 11. In the original Hebrew text, the word for I or my is used 8 times. He sounds like a spoiled child who never grew up. Nabal literally says, my bread, my water, my meat, my shears, I take, I slaughter, I give, I know. And with all of that, first of all, not even giving David the dignity of who he is, and Nabal saying, well, everything I have is mine, 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 mine. We're told about Nabal, what he has and what he does before we're even given his name. He's not a man of character. David hears this, and David just loses his cool. He is so ticked off. We've been helping him this whole time, and he doesn't even acknowledge who I am. David is caught off guard. Instead of being intentional and thinking through what he ought to do, I think he reacts out of these circumstances. There's only so much of this blasted desert I can take. He puts on his sword and says, let's go get what we deserve. If he won't give us anything, then we're going to get everything that we can get. This ungrateful, spoiled, self-centered brat isn't serving a purpose, doesn't deserve to live. We're going to decide that. The world would be better off without him. And so David resolves to absolutely destroy Nabal. Saul is threatening David's life. And David has a sense that God has anointed Saul, so David's not going to touch Saul. And I think Saul's like David's number one concern. And that's his focus. And now just kind of the everyday life of protecting and making your way out in the wilderness, Nabal is absolutely ungrateful and insults. I think David's focused on Saul, and the devil lets David be tempted to take matters in his own hands in that direction with Nabal. Isn't that how it often goes with us, that we're so focused on our big problems that we can completely fall on our face and sin when it comes to maybe the more daily problems that we deal with? Our focus is on one thing, but temptation comes through the back door and we simply react. Well, God is forming David in his character. That doesn't mean that David is above temptation. David can forget about God in moment to moment. In this scene, he does. David has totally forgotten who he is, who he's been chosen to be. He knows, as a king, you can't take matters of justice just into your own hands. You have to follow God's will and God's word. His anger is directed towards this man of selfishness. But what happens here is that David is also becomes full of himself. When our enemies get the best of us, we start acting like our enemies. Here, David is about to act like Nabal as a king. He's about ready to act like Saul as a king. So as David is marching down the road, 400 men mumbling about how useless this has been to protect this man's possessions, what happens? David is stopped in his tracks by a woman named Abigail. He's interrupted by Abigail, interrupted by her grace, interrupted by God's grace. This is a story of good news. David's given something he didn't ask for. He didn't earn. He didn't want at the moment. God interrupts his plan to carry out a sin by putting Abigail in his path. Now, you can't miss the contrast between Abigail and her husband. I mean, it made me wonder, I think, only in an age of arranged marriages could you get this crazy of a mismatch, right, in character. These two people on completely different wavelengths, living under the same roof. Nabal was a fool, but Abigail is wise. Nabal is in an ugly state of drunkenness. Abigail is articulate, intelligent, beautiful. Abigail understands the threats to their livelihood. Nabal is clueless. He doesn't seem to care about the fact that his words have consequences. Abigail is obviously the person their servants go to when there's a problem. Did you catch that? You know, our master, he just completely insulted the future king of Israel. Maybe you should do something about it. Abigail is the actual leader of this home, and the Bible commends her for it. I want you to let that sink in. This is Old Testament. The scripture commends Abigail's actions precisely where she acknowledged that her husband is a fool and she takes matters into her own hands to do something about it. So whatever you believe about God's will for genders, this is an important story because it tells us what I think everyone who's looked at this passage acknowledges, that our loyalty and conviction to God, no matter who we are, male or female, husband or wife, always comes before our loyalty to our spouse. Abigail isn't just the opposite of Nabal, but she's like David. The two words to describe her in verse 3, intelligent, beautiful, are identical to the words that were given about David when he's introduced earlier in 1 Samuel. But Abigail also had courage. You think it took courage for her to just stop in front of 400 armed men and bow to the ground? I mean, that's guts right there. Kneels down to the ground. David, in the state of mind he is in, he could have ignored her. He could have done something much worse. But Abigail did something that made her unable to be ignored. She acted with courage and she spoke with conviction and clarity. She doesn't downplay her husband's sinfulness or his foolishness. She acknowledges it truthfully. Nabal is wicked, and probably use a lot of words that some of you parents would say, oh, we don't want our pastor to use those words. He's a fool. He acted selfishly in his reply to David's messengers. And she said she was unable to be involved at that moment. Nevertheless, what she does is she bears the responsibility for her household and represents her husband before David. Abigail does what Nabal did not do. She brings gifts from their wealth. She takes Nabal's sin upon herself and asks David to forgive her in verse 28. Now, that is a substitutionary atonement. That is a let me absorb, let the weight of the sin of my foolish husband fall on me. She is being Christ-like to her husband because her husband has failed to be Christ-like to her. And this type of grace that doesn't say, oh, let's just kind of mask over the truth. He's really not that bad. Let's be gracious to him. That's not what grace means in the Bible. Grace means this guy is a sinful fool, but someone needs to pay for it. let me do that. This type of grace, this type of atonement has a real effect. David says, the Lord has kept, or Abigail says to David, the Lord has kept you from bloodshed and from avenging yourself. Abigail's very presence has been used by God to interrupt David's murderous deeds. Abigail saves David from sinning against Nabal. But more importantly, Abigail saves David from sinning against God. The part of her speech that struck me the deepest are verse 28 and 29. What a woman with theological insight says, in essence, is that David can't enter into this battle of vengeance against Nabal because David fights the Lord's battles, and this isn't one of them. The implication here, of course, is that David's current course of action would not be in line with the Lord's battle. And in verse 29, she demonstrates that she knows him. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, she knows Saul is after David. She declares that David is bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. Abigail reminds David where his true identity and his true security lie. And it's not that the Nabals of the world will pay him. It's that God will protect him. She knows this, and she reminds David of this. David is secure in the life of God's grace. His enemies, on the other hand, God will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. Pocket of a sling? Courage? David can't help but remember when he did fight the Lord's battle before Goliath, when the pocket of his sling hurled and killed the Philistine. David is asked to remember that he did indeed fight the Lord's battles, and God is empowered, as God empowered a stone to destroy Goliath, God will empower him to lead Israel. David, you're so much more than this. That's an inspirational speech from a woman of grace to a future leader of Israel. Don't do this deed toward my foolish husband. And David's response, of course. David could have said, well, I wasn't really going to hurt him. That's what cowardly men do. When God interrupts them, they're like, oh, it wasn't going to be that big of a deal. They downplay their sin. They pretend it's not. David, praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel. You have sent me today to meet me. Because of you, I've been rescued. Because of you. David recognizes God's providence in Abigail. God's providence doesn't exist to give David opportunities to kill his enemies. God's providence exists when this woman sent by God speaks the truth of God into his life and reminds him and saves him from wickedness. Do you see how this is different than what, unfortunately, historically, I think the church has said, well, Abigail, since she's a woman, she should be kind of a doormat, and she can't help it. She just has to honor her husband, kind of overlook his faults. That's not Abigail. But I think that's what we've sometimes characterized, and especially the traditional conservative church, we've said that that's just the absolute moral ethic. But this is also not this feminist belief that Abigail just needs to harness all the power she can and divorce Nabal and say, oh, I'm free from him, I'm free from that fool. Power be to the women. She does the gospel way. She takes his sin upon herself. That's unheard of in our world. That only comes from God, from the Bible. That only comes when you see that that's a reflection of Jesus Christ. How Christ said to be Christ-like. And so when we find ourselves today, if we want to have a Christian response to being connected with foolish people in our families, in our perhaps businesses, other institutions, There's truth and grace of the gospel. We cannot ignore the fact there are some people that are blockheads. And the things they say and do are going to just get themselves in a whole lot of trouble. What do we do? Oh, they're not that bad. Let's just kind of smear over it. Let's just be nice to each other. And we have to point that out. We have to say, you know, this is wrong. This is going to hurt you. But when trouble comes, and it could ruin our families, or it could ruin the good things that God has given us, would you and I dare to say, let me absorb the punishment of that person? Could that be our way of being Christ-like and actually sharing and embodying the gospel to someone else? Let, you know, they lost a lot of money in that really stupid business transaction, but let me pay for some of it. Not because I have to, not because they're going to take me to court and make me, but I'm connected to this person. This person matters to me. This is a person that God has given me to care for and serve. And maybe God will use that to either save that person, or that'll actually be added to that person's judgment in the end. Abigail leaves it in God's hands. Take these gifts my husband should have given you, but the outcome is in God's hands, and God judges Nabal. 10 days later, Nabal breathes his last. Not because David struck him down. Not because Abigail showed him what he had coming and took the power in herself, but God is the one who avenges. God is the one who judges. God is the one who has the final say. And Nabal paid the price for his wickedness, foolishness. And Abigail simply embodied the gospel to him and to David. I think this is an important story to get into our hearts, into our lives, because it acknowledges the fact that no, women are not doormats in their households. They have a responsibility to speak truth to when their husbands are not acting. But neither is just taking over and having all the power and not washing your hands and divorcing and all the things that the world says, those aren't the solutions either. The solution is to say, how can I take some of this as a family unit on in a way that Jesus Christ bore some of my sin? How can I bear the weight of others and let God be the judge?